You're joining We the People Radio for the second hour. I kind of said that really fast. We the People Radio.
We the People.
I was one of those. That was like a mumbler there for a second. Okay, so this is the second hour. The first hour, we had on the former ambassador to the Holy See. Oh, sure, easy for me to say. So we're moving from the Vatican. Now we're going to shift over to Israel and Israel. And yes, I did say Israel and Israel. So we spoke with him last week briefly. He was sitting in a Humvee on the border of Gaza and Israel, there on the southern end. And this week, I don't know where we're going to find him, but he is the founder of the Zaka Foundation, the Israel Support Fund, as well as the founder and director of International Business Development for Proactive Global Security. And that website is proactiveglobalsecurity.com, and post it on our website. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, if you want to call us. It's 530-605-4567. We didn't give you that number the last hour because we didn't want you to call us. We were having a hard enough time trying to figure out how to talk to the ambassador. It was kind of nerve-wracking a little bit. So we have our friend Israel with us to give us a little bit of an update on what's happening in the big world. Are you in the Humvee this week, or do you get to be at your house?
Still sitting in the Humvee.
You're sitting?
It's quiet, so you don't hear anything.
It was just very quiet. So yeah. So how's, I mean, I guess you don't get to say this often, but how's the ceasefire going?
So far we have the ceasefire, but as we know, the truth regarding the ceasefire, when you really know what the Islam and the Quran talks about, is you go to ceasefire to rearm and to regroup. And from what we see is that they are fixing up the tunnels we blew up.
Oh.
And they are trying to regroup, rearm. I guess round number, whatever number it will be.
So, so they're not busy rebuilding the homes for people and feeding them and all that, like, you know, because there's obviously there are factions around the world and in our country who pity them because you guys are mean to them.
Yeah, no, they are not rebuilding the homes at this point, and
rebuilding the
focus,
tunnels.
The tunnels, yeah. I guess the focus is the tunnels. Because, you know, the way they look at it, some can say that they won the war, you know. They're trying to say they won it. That Israel came to negotiations on the term. From the perspective of Israel, we wanted to do whatever we can to stop the rockets from coming down on us. So far, it's peaceful. The kids were able to go back to school beginning of the year. Everything normal, but we know. And we don't live in this fantasy world. Oh, we have a peace agreement, so everything will be quiet. We know what they are planning, and we know, and we see now what they are doing.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's fooled by a peaceful ceasefire. I think everybody knows they're rearming and fixing. And now, how do you know they're actually fixing their tunnels? Do you guys have like satellite images, drones? How are you keeping track of that?
It's called the eyes and ears.
Sure.
Yeah, folks on the ground.
You're not dealing with that big of an area. It's pretty hard to have secrets there.
Well, I would imagine there's a fair amount of people on the other side that don't want that to all start up again, and they're supplying information to help you folks kind of keep your finger on it and not let it get out of hand again. But what can you do to stop it short of going back in there again?
So in the sense, to really stop the building, anything that goes in from inside Gaza, we won't be able to do anything unless we go in. If we see or we hear anything that they're coming past the border, like as if towards into Israel, then we can do something about it.
Right.
But it does become a problem, and I know Israel is supposed to come out the next few weeks or so with some technology for the ground to be able to figure out where they're digging.
Oh, well, that makes sense. And did you guys know that they had that many tunnels?
We've known that they had tunnels for a long time. But the extent of what little surprise was the amount that they did in different types. You know, they had attack tunnels. They had tunnels for commercial use where they brought in, you know, cars and different equipment that they wanted.
They brought cars through the tunnels?
Sure.
What?
Holy mackerel, how big were they?
Some tunnels were big in the size, the commercial size tunnels were big enough for a container even to go through.
Get out! And so they were taking stuff from where to where? From your side over to their side?
No, they used to come
their
into
side?
Egypt, to the Rafia border.
Oh.
The Egypt border.
Does Egypt know that's going on?
I forget about them.
The Egyptian government knew for months and years that there were tunnels. The current administration has done some work about it because, you know, they have a little fight between the current Egyptian regime and Hamas. So they want to do whatever they can to destroy their side. But, yeah. And for a while, it's been on the Egyptian side. They knew about it. They did nothing about it.
Hmm. Wow.
That's surprising because I would think that it would be in their best interest as well to not allow that to go on. But apparently their philosophy was different.
Apparently they had a little secret there. So were you guys able to blow up those tunnels?
No, the tunnels on the Egyptian side, they had to do it. The Egyptians did it.
And they did, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, they did some, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this thing just goes on and on and on. You can never write them off, huh?
Yes. You can't write it off. You just have to keep your eyes and ears open with everything going around. And the south border, the northern border, I mean, anywhere you look around, right now in Israel, there's something on one side of the border that's going on.
No kidding. So you guys, at this point, you are, like, you're functioning as eyes and ears on your side, and, you know, during the ceasefire?
No, during the ceasefire, it's the eyes and ears, preparing, knowing to be prepared for the next round. It's just a matter of time now. And that's all you can do.
Sure. So, everyone in, for people who don't know, everyone in Israel is in the military at some point. Is it right out of high school, or how does that work?
Yes. Boys are from about 17 and a half, we're called 18 to 21, that's 3 years, and girls are 2 years, yeah, pretty much right after high school.
Okay. And then they go to college after that? Or is this like your college job?
No. Then most, after the 3 years or the 2 years, they go to college. Or they, if they want a specific position, then they stay in for a year or 2 years. You know, everyone depending on his will.
Okay. And how long have you guys done that?
How long, what, since the military began?
Yeah, how long have you had, like, automatic, you know, military service, or whatever you want to call it?
I guess since when the military began.
Okay, so for really forever.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of smart, because it's interesting, if you get into if we got into a battle here in the United States, how many people don't know how to handle weapons or any of that? Everyone in Israel is prepared to jump in.
Yeah, that's the one unique side of a mandatory military where everybody has the skill equally. Some have more versus less.
What is the rules as far as owning weapons in Israel? We have our Second Amendment over here that
fight for all the time.
Yeah, we have to constantly fight for, and there are certain weapons, certain military weapons, obviously we cannot have in our possession. But what about in Israel? What types of weapons can you own, or can you own weapons over there?
Okay, in Israel, the law is you can't own a weapon.
You cannot?
But Yeah, you cannot. But somehow every other Israeli has a weapon.
Somehow.
And that's the way it works is you have to be 21 years of age to be able to carry a weapon. And you have to live in what's called a dangerous area.
Which is really the whole country.
And it has to, or you work in some type of a job that may need it. Or, if you've finished a certain rank in the military or the police or any other security services.
You automatically get to keep a weapon.
So then you keep a weapon. So a lot of Israelis carry handguns. Mm. And then we have, if you live in certain areas, then you have a backup of the military M16 or Tavor weapon that we have now to do in case something big happens.
What's designated as a dangerous area? Do they have a list of areas that are considered dangerous that you are able to keep a weapon?
Yeah, anything that's what's called past the green line or close to the green line is considered a more high dangerous risky area. So that's under the designation that if you live there, you can carry a weapon.
Okay, and how far away is that from the border?
So which one, the northern or the southern border? If you live on the southern border, so then most people don't carry because it's peaceful considered. Each little village town carries a gun, or they have a few of them in the village, in the town. Northern border, the same thing. I think most Israelis carry are in the country. It's considered Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria, probably that fraction of the in-country carries a lot more weapons.
Yeah, I would imagine. And you always know that you might need it. We're going to come back with you in just a second. And Bill said he has a burning question, but I wouldn't let him ask it because otherwise we get behind, huh? So we'll be right back with Israel Stefanski. We are here on We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me Israelites.
Good job, Billy.
Oh,
you
knew
this one.
Oh, I knew this
one. Of course you did. You and Bob.
Bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Oh, Israelites.
Bill's ruining your music, Bob.
Sorry.
Well, that came out of nowhere. Hey, who was that?
Since Desmond Dekker in the Aces, late 60s. Israelites.
Thanks, giving away my age. Thanks, Bob.
Oh, you just enhanced it, Bill.
Israel and I didn't know who it was. You boys. You're rejoining We the People Radio. We have switched from our first hour at the Vatican. Now we're in Israel. So we're talking about all the variety of issues. So Bill had a question for you.
Yeah, you were saying that pretty much everybody over there has military training at some point in their life, usually starting at a young age. What's the crime situation over there with everybody having military experience? And obviously access to weapons. Do you have a crime problem over there? Do you have a gang problem? I mean, we have gangs over here that are probably no different than anywhere else, but most of them don't have military training. What's your situation in Israel?
Yeah, it's true that everybody has the training. Gang problems, I would say we have criminals like every place else. And we do have criminals that go up all the way, you know, and murder people or blow up cars, you know, to kill their rival gangs. Yeah, we do have it. But I would say overall crime is lower than probably the U.S.
Well, you guys,
and I don't know if that comes because of they're afraid maybe you have a gun or don't. That, I don't know.
Keeps everybody honest, doesn't it?
I would say, hopefully. That's what we all hope. Everybody should be honest.
Well, you do a ton of training all over the place, and I was looking on your website at proactiveglobalsecurity.com, and I was seeing the Denver Bomb Squad, Battalion Fire Chief in D.C., and EMS in Washington, D.C., so you're kind of all over the place. You're not just in Israel.
Yes, because one of the skills that I have, so over the years that I've gotten, and I say, as an American, it's important to give back. And yes, I want to be able to train the first responder, law enforcement in the U.S., to what's really going on, what they should be aware of, and how to respond, and to understand that life is more important than product. You know, human life you can't replace. Products you could. And that's the idea. Something happens, how to faster respond and not live through the bureaucracy of who goes, who responds, who what, and who's going to pay for us if we do it, and all the red tape that does exist. And try to explain to them, guys, something happened, we go. Payment, we'll worry about it later.
Sure.
And that's how it works in Israel.
Well, we see that here, especially with our fires. We've been having huge fires up here in Northern California, and there is always, and I don't know how much of it, I'm sure it takes some time, but to figure out who's the boss of that fire. Is it the state or the federal government, or you guys don't have any of that?
No, in Israel, every summer we do have little fires, not compared to what you guys have in California, but there's one thing that I would say in Israel happens, and I never yet gotten an answer why in the U.S. they don't do that way. If a fire happens, we go and do whatever it takes to stop it. We don't wait for a certain amount of brush to burn or trees or acreage to burn before we can call the state. And after, if it burns more, we can call the federal government to do it. It doesn't exist. A fire happens, we do everything to stop the fire. Here in the U.S., I know they wait for a certain amount of brush, and then they can call the airplanes, and then they can call wherever they need to call. In the meantime, it's burning, and it's burning, and...
Yeah, surprise.
Homes are in threat, so...
Lost a town.
Yeah.
Well, you guys also, another thing you guys get to do over there that I think we wish we could do is profile. You're a huge thing for your security is profiling, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't call it profile.
Okay, what we call profile.
You call it profile, we call it behavior pattern.
I like that.
We don't profile because we see somebody, whether he's white or black or Hispanic or whatever, wherever he comes from. We don't look and, oh, because he's that, so we're going to stop him. We stop everyone. We manage to say, okay, let's say the age from 75 to 55. What are the chances that they are going to do a crime, arm, or whatever when they travel? You minimize. They say, okay, from that age, probably none, or maybe a few. And then you break down the ages, for example. You say the potential troublemakers are always going to be from the age, let's say, of 22 to 35. Just giving an example. So you know what? We're going to focus more on questioning that range of ages because they are more potential. So we do like a risk analysis to understand where the problem can come. And then focus on that and not just spend a resource on every 10th and the airport. Oh, we're going to check, even if she's an 82-year-old woman with a pacemaker or something, and we're going to check and frisk her because she's number 10 on the list.
Yeah, because I remember when we did a program with you before, ended Oh, my gosh. It was January 29th of 2012. Okay, it was a pretty long time ago. Seemed like yesterday. We were talking about Homeland Security and the excessive, you know, the X-ray machines and all that stuff. And you had told us at the time that this is all kind of a waste.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, nothing. And, you know, nothing changed.
No, no. Well, you folks over there on your airport security is totally different than ours, and I can't remember the last time you had an incident in an airport, but you actually have to go through security at an airport long before you get to the airport, don't you?
Yeah, we have a little distance. So, for example, every car that comes into the airport ground has to go through a check. You stop, somebody looks at you, talks to you, and if you have a different passenger in the car, if you're a taxi driver, then they talk also to the passenger to see where he's coming from. And just that initial check, a car is coming onto the airport property. We have the ELPs, the license plates recognition, just to know if it's a stolen car or not.
Mm.
So 3 kilometers away from the actual terminal, that's where it happened.
Yeah, and I you know, that's smart. I mean, it makes sense.
I can hear people saying, well, oh, but it's a smaller country. We have too many airports that wouldn't work here.
Which
I think is stupid, but okay.
I've heard that question. Oh, it's Israel, it's smaller, we can do it. And I say, you can do it too. Each airport, each state, its own little country, and yes, you can do it. There's ways to do it. It doesn't mean it has to be exactly like Israel. There's so many ways. If there's a will, there's a way to make it where it's secure, not too invasive, and the idea is to make enough security that people don't realize that it affects them because you want passengers to come and travel. People realize it takes too long, it's hard, less people travel.
Well, how many issues do you find three miles away from the airport?
No, so it's 3 kilometers.
Oh, 3 kilometers,
it's about a mile and a half.
Sure.
Away, and the reason why you want the distance, that just in case if somebody with a car comes, tries to ram through the security gate, there's a distance before he has to travel before he gets to the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us the time to respond if in case he does.
Sure.
A thing like this does happen.
So if you think something looks funky, you pull him over and check him further?
Yes. Yes.
Eh, that cuts back on a lot of stuff. So by the time they get into the airport, the only thing that's left to check is the luggage.
Yeah, but if a car comes over and is more suspicious, or a tourist bus, sometimes they pull it over to the side and talk to the passengers, or if it's a car, and if it's not good enough, they will check the luggage before at the checkpoint, before they will continue going in. And at the airport today, in today's Israeli airport, you come, you get to the security counter, they ask you some questions, you go straight to check-in, and you keep going. The questions could be a bit more what's called invasive, because they are trying to find, to see if you're going to lie or how you're going to behave with the question they ask you. So if you are honest, you have nothing to hide, not a problem.
What else do you do there that we should be doing but aren't?
What else? For example, we have undercover agents but at the airport, just in case. And the rule in Israel, nobody brings a weapon into the airport. Only those that are allowed to carry on the airport personnel, so to speak. So there's very few people that are skilled to have a weapon in the airport, just in case if needed. Everything that we can do that will keep the airport safe and keep the flow of it. Not like the recent incident, was it NLAX, where somebody came in and shot the TSA worker and then went in and did whatever he did. And me being through LAX many times, and I'm like, so many cops are there and somebody, and nobody could have done anything about it. You know, and that, like, an incident like this in Israel within 15 seconds or less, it would have been over.
Sure. Right. And we had that one. There was a lady. She got all the way through pretty much the whole thing. It didn't have a ticket.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's exactly in Israel. A thing like this wouldn't have happened.
Right, right. Now, how do you handle, obviously, we have a huge border issue here. How does Israel cover, I mean, obviously they have a much smaller, much shorter border than we have, but how do you cover your border area? Obviously you have crossings that have guards, but you don't have a wall that goes all the way along your border, do you?
Sure we do.
Really?
We saw the problem, we take care of the problem, we build it.
I think you're being a little too simplistic.
Well,
there.
So that much makes, for that one.
No, it
that
makes, this is reality.
This makes a little too reality. Much sense.
We saw in 2000, when we had all the suicide bombers, we saw what was happening. We put up a wall. Some places it's a wall. Some places it's a steel fence. And it's going all the way down to the border of Egypt. You can't, no games. We saw the issue. We took care of it, and we built it. Yes, there is. In Israel, we guard, in some places it's a wall, in some places it's a fence, and yeah, we guard it.
Have you consulted at all on our border, we'll just call it an issue, have you done any work there?
I've consulted, as I asked, and I said, with all the amount of money and things that are going on now, we could have built that wall 10 years ago. When the conversation started, we could have had it, built it, part a wall, part whatever, a fence, something, and you wouldn't be where you are today.
Well, see, over here, though, we have to get some engineers, we have to consult with the unions, we have...
And then we have to decide, there's you
there's
know...
There's safety issues.
Don't forget the environmental impact.
Yeah, we have environmental impact. We could kill
report,
a turtle doing it, and, you know, I mean, it's a whole lot different here than it is in Israel. So.
No, it's not... Yes, it's different, but when it comes to safety, what? So you're going to tell the people that are concerned about if you're going to kill a chicken or something when you do it? Listen, the life of the chicken is more important than the life of the American people.
Exactly. We do. Unfortunately,
yeah,
that's exactly
in
what
California,
we do.
I know you have it.
Yeah. There's it's insanity. I mean, it's and I'm being a little glib about it, but it's when it comes to safety and when it comes to protecting our nation, there's no reason we couldn't build a wall, just like you said, and have it finished in a very timely fashion. But they make such huge press out of the idea that it's going to cost too much and it's not going to stop them, and you know, on and on and on. But you've done it and it works.
Well, okay.
We've done it and it works. Yes, it costs money and it worked. And we've seen how they've tried that as we were building it, the terrorists needed to go further down the Israel border to be able to get around it. So automatically, the minute you build a wall, you're now pushing them to go further away if they want, if it's not built yet. But over the years, if you think of, yes, it cost a lot of money to build it, the amount of money you paid for the borders on the border, the technology that you put there, whatever you did, the U.S. government spent, if they spent, you already outnumbered the amount of money it would cost you to build a wall.
Yeah, exactly.
And if an attack or something does happen, the economics, you built the wall, it's there. The economic devastation is more than the wall.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Like
and the cost of human lives.
You might have tens of thousands of, we'll just call them children, even though we know a lot of them aren't. You might have tens of thousands of children flowing across the border if you didn't have a wall, say, for instance. Hey, Israel, I'd like to know from you, if you guys had that many people blowing across your border, I mean, what would you guys do about it?
No, we had And that doesn't make the, all the, a lot, we have in Israel a lot of, I wouldn't say Somalis, the Iranians or people from Sri Lanka that came in to Israel to work, and they came in because the wall wasn't finished yet.
Hey.
And they came in, and they came in, I think, about 200,000, or maybe we have even more by now. But once the wall was up, that's it. And that even increased the government to work faster to build up the wall because we saw it can be a problem. We saw they came in. Nobody knows who they are. They say they are victims of genocide or whatever political asylum they were looking for. Nobody can really know if it's true or not.
Sure.
They started living in their own little communities. They caused, in the areas where they moved in, for people to leave. Real estate numbers to go down because nobody wanted to live there. And then the crime between them and amongst others started going up. So right. There was a problem, and the people in Israel came up and said, enough is enough. So the Israeli government, first we did is to finish the wall. And then the Israeli government went to the countries from where these people came and said, would you take them back? And I don't know exactly the numbers. A whole bunch of them did go back. Israel gave them some money or something and did go back. But I'm not so well involved and know much of how deep this issue is. But no question about it, that there was a problem. We look and we try to take care of it right away.
Well, if they're not coming across our border fast enough, we just import them. We put them on airplanes and fly them into different cities in our country and set up whole communities. I mean, we have huge Somali communities back east that have been moved in there by the federal government. And now I just heard the other day that there's something like, what was the figure? It was like 6,000 foreign nationals that are over here on work visas that we can't find now. we let them in, we gave them work visas, they've disappeared, they've blended into society, and obviously, you know, you're going to have a certain amount of that when you have immigration laws the way we have them, but we don't seem to put the emphasis on security that you folks do, and I think we're suffering the consequences of that right now.
Yes, you are suffering it. Not to say Israel doesn't suffer from it. We have less, but we have some that come in on regular tourist visa, and then they end up staying there as well from years ago. And we have what's called a unit, like you guys have ICE. We call it a different name. And we do go out, and we look for them. And restaurants and hotels, you could be driving on the bus. They'll stop the bus, and if they see you, they check your documents, you get off the bus, they'll take you.
Yeah.
We are doing a certain enforcement to make sure they know and to see.
So you've,
serious about
you've
it.
Decided to be a sovereign country, and, you know, with the amount of pressure on your country from all sides and all the bad guys out there not doing that, huge risk. We face the risk, too, but we can spread it out a little bit more. We have a little more land mass, although I still think it's not a good idea. When we come back with Israel, we're going to talk a little bit more about maybe some things we could do here that have been recommended, but maybe not followed. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, here at KCNR 1460. Amen.
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 Freudian slip.
Amen.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Bordeaux, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Great, Hayden Place, trouble in the Sioux.
Okay.
Try to learn the words of that song.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about the fire on the break, which prompted the song, the Happy Camp fire that's still burning up there.
It wasn't actually what prompted the song.
Shut up, Bob.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
It was the trouble in the Suez line.
Yeah, we were talking about world peace.
You said fire as I was typing statistics into the chat room. That fire right now is 96,869 acres. So 97,000 acres. Oh, and it's 30% contained, which is alarming. 2,600 firefighters, 78 crews, 14 helicopters, 124 engines, 22 dozers, and 34 water tenders. 30% contained. We're losing almost 100,000 acres of timber.
Yeah.
Awesome. So now that we've highlighted that. Bit of stupidity.
What are we, 60, 80 miles away from there? And it was terrible smoky last Friday. It was all that smoke going down
the valley.
You should
see some of the pictures. It looks like somebody put off an atom bomb there.
Where will the spotted owls go to live?
Yeah.
Well, I think they're going to have a comeback.
An evergreen airplane and just dump all the water on it.
See, and part of that is extremely difficult to fight. They can't send in the big, stuff with the, what's the red stuff, you know, the
Borate.
Yeah, the Borate bombers, they can't send the big ones in because by the time they drop it, they've got to drop from such a high altitude, it doesn't do anything. And then you have a bunch of wilderness area. Well, we've made these rules, more brilliance, rules that you can't take dozers in there, you can't drop the fire retardant on them, you can only drop water. So, of course, it's a mist by the time it gets to the ground.
I'm not real sure where they came up with the idea of having
with hand crews.
Big jet airliner-sized planes dropping water from, God, I don't know, 5,000 feet or something.
Yeah, I mean,
by the time it gets to the ground, it's like fog.
Anyway, tough deal.
Anyway, I don't know anything about fire.
So there's our fire update. Okay, so let's go back. You have consulted tons of times with the Homeland Security guys. Give us a couple things that you guys recommended, or the team you were with recommended, and that we didn't do, and why didn't we do it? What excuse did they give you?
I'll give you an example from one of the agencies that we are currently consulting, you know, from the distance, so to speak.
Okay.
When things quiet down, they're going. And it's a department on the West Coast. Well, a lot of their intel people have been training with us, and they admitted we have a problem on how we gather our intelligence, and the city doesn't allow us to do this, and other members don't allow us to do that. We can't. So at the end of the day, what we are doing, it's called, we gather intelligence, not proactively, but as it comes in. If something happens, that's how we know something happens. We don't know anything in advance because we can't do the proactive intelligence. So at least I'm happy that they admit they failed in their way of how they do it, and they're willing to learn a new method, or the Israeli, so to speak, method. But we don't call it. We use the idea of how we do it in Israel is it's not just terrorism related. It could be criminal related. It's a focus. How can you look at your city and figure out who your troublemakers, where are your potentials? You know it. Every city, even you know where your trouble neighborhoods are in the city or the town you live in. So it's not called and you're gathering intelligence that you can't do it, you're not doing it that anybody particular, you know, there's ways that it could be done. And one of the people they have in the city are today a lot in the news for being in Syria. So it's when proactive intelligence is a good thing to do. There's ways to do it, and to do it smart, and to do it right. But you're doing it for the safety of the community. You're not doing it to just have files on people.
No, and then once you have that information, you act on it.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, we keep letting, you know, we let these guys in and out of the country. We let them in on visas, and then we don't. Did you know?
No.
I just learned last, whatever it was, Friday, Thursday, that when we have people come into this country to work, especially ag labor and people that would fall under that category, do you realize we check the I-94 form when they come into the country? They can be here for up to, I think it's up to 3 years if they move from labor contract to labor contract with different companies, but they have to spend 3 months in their own country. The problem is we don't track that form when they leave. So we know when they come in, but we have no idea when they go out.
So they don't.
Yeah, so what's the incentive to leave?
And that's not just ag, it's many, many tourists that way.
Well, I think they
come in. Hotels, tourists.
They get a green card, and green means go, and they go and don't come back, and they just blend in, and that's their citizenship papers, I think, because then you hear the argument, well, you know, they've been here 10 years and they've been a member of the community and they pay their taxes, they should be able to stay. No, they shouldn't be able to stay. They're not citizens.
Exactly. What do you guys? You guys just send them back? Is that how it works there?
Yes. We check. We don't send everybody back. I don't know what the rule is, depending on what purpose they came on and what are they doing in the country. And if when they came, you know, they didn't come through the border. They came just an airplane, and they came originally with their intent for what they were coming for. But those that snuck in through the border, through that, yes, they get caught, they get in jail. Israel built a special jail where to put them, and then they put them on planes and send them back home. I think they give them a little stipend or something. I don't know what the rule of the game is on that.
Do you have any idea what the numbers are for folks that, you know, they do come in illegally, they do a little stint in jail, and then they're sent back? How many of those folks actually return again? Do you know?
Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. See,
nobody.
That's my point.
Okay, zero.
We just catch them, and then we give them a notice to appear, and then we got to go catch them again because, you know, it's funny, they don't appear. You know, they don't come to
imagine,
court.
Imagine that. Well, do you guys, so you're not faced with questions like, should we give amnesty to all these people who have snuck into the country?
No. I mean, we do have certain groups that say you should give it to them, but I think the voice overall in Israel is send them home.
So, no traction there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so if you had one message to give to the folks here, who don't, I mean, obviously we can't change everything that goes on in the government. Needless to say, it's too darn big. But if you were going to give people a word of advice for their own personal security, what would you tell them?
In today's world, I would say know what's going around your surrounding. Pay attention to what's going on in the world and be more aware of what's happening. Because these things are moving now very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very fast. And right. So somebody that thought, oh, it's all in the Middle East. Sure, but ISIS flags are flying now in America. Nobody thought about that. You have American suicide bombers going over and blowing themselves up. It could be your neighbor, you never know, and your schoolmate. Yeah, it's happening faster than you can think.
Yeah, and then we have 9/11 coming up, and I got a real bad feeling about this one. I think real good possibility we could be looking at some domestic violence of some kind, because it just seems like they're just trying to outdo now what they did the year before. And I don't know. You're right.
You
things are moving
terrorism,
quick.
Terrorism, not domestic violence.
Well,
yeah.
Right.
Domestic terrorism.
Domestic terrorism, I should have said.
I guess if the domestic violence is on you, I guess it is domestic terrorism, though.
Yeah. No, it's a scary time because you're right. Things are happening a lot faster now and on such a large scale that, you know, we do have to be aware of our surroundings and aware of what's going on in the world and just be prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah, stay off the, stay out of the big places. So Israel, we hope that the ceasefire lasts longer than it usually does for you guys. We hope that you're not dragged back into war with those guys right away. And are you guys tuning up your Iron Dome?
No, it's still working.
Good. Yeah, but I mean,
we
like,
take a chance.
Yeah, tuning it up. I mean, making sure it covers covers everything and is in good working order.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, good luck over there. And Israel, thanks for taking time this morning to talk to us about what's happening.
We look forward to more updates from Proactive Global Security.
And we hope one day you can do your show directly from Israel.
Oh, my gosh, how much fun would that be? Okay. Well,
the station is there.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. All right, everybody, we're off to Sovereign Minds with Linda and Mark. Just a couple minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, here at KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.